to be so lucky, with pensions coming through. I was reading yesterday my pension is going up next year. I just hope I live long enough to see it. Right, welcome along. My guest this morning is Delisa Needham, writer of How I Met My Man and How You Can Meet Yours. I think it's a little bit one-sided myself, but we'll come on to that a bit later on as we talk about the new dating show that's coming up on BBC iPlayer. But good morning, Delisa.
Good morning, John. Good morning to everybody who's listening.
And how was your weekend?
It was lovely. This is the most beautiful time of the year, isn't it? And aren't we lucky in Tunbridge Wells? The Pantiles was packed with people, and the countryside all around Kent is just so beautiful. So beautiful.
It is. I saw. I went to Hever Castle yesterday.
Did you?
I thought I'd have a day out, and we had lunch there and walked around the lake, went to the exhibitions. And then on the way back visited a couple of graveyards, but that's purely hobby.
Graveyards are fascinating. So what was on at Hever Castle?
Oh, it was just a general open day, but there's an exhibition there on Catherine of Aragon and Anne Boleyn and their relationship. And it's been very well designed, and you just follow the trail through. And they've got both Anne Boleyn's Book of Hours, her prayer book, and Catherine of Aragon's Book of Hours, and they're published by the same German publisher, but there are remarkable differences between them.
Right.
So Catherine was definitely more interested in the Latin, the Catholic side, and Anne was verging on Protestantism, and made lots of notes of that in her copy.
Oh, fascinating.
It's worth a visit.
So Catherine was wife number one.
Yes, she was originally Henry VIII's brother's wife.
Yes, yes.
Arthur.
Which was...
He died after 5 months. That must have been a stormy relationship. No, we won't go there. And then Henry married her, and of course then no children were produced, so he looked for a way of getting out of the marriage and tried to convince everybody that it was a sin to marry his brother's wife, yet when you read the Hebrew scriptures, that was the thing he did.
Yes. He fancied Anne Boleyn anyway. That was really...
Oh, he fancied a lot of women, didn't he?
He was a bit of a...
Yeah, we weren't going there. Right,
Didn't have to marry them, though. 6 times, gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a serial...
Yeah, he also brought a new meaning to quick divorce, didn't he? Off with the head, yeah.
Yeah, the cut above the rest. Yeah. Right, then... Okay, enough of the jokes. Right, we're going to talk about being an agony aunt, and I've got one question lined up for you. So if anybody out there has got a question for the listener this morning, email me studio@westkentradio.co.uk and we'll see what we can do to help. Now, the first question is, and this was from somebody who said, I'm 22 and I'm going out with somebody who's 46. Does age make a difference?
No, it doesn't. If you've got a lot in common and you're enjoying each other's company, no, it doesn't. I have had recent experience of this, not for myself, but for another friend of mine. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I think it's interesting. He's 60 and she's 22, 23, but they met over a common subject that they are both very, very passionate about. It's his business and she was studying it. And so their conversations around this subject were in depth and so much enjoying each other's company. And he's a very young and attractive 60-year-old and she's a very mature 22, 23-year-old. And they really enjoyed each other's company enormously. And I suppose sex was the icing on the cake in that. But what made things difficult for them was other people on the outside made their lives uncomfortable and their family couldn't cope with it. So I think what my answer to that would be is the outside pressures are what you probably have to deal with most in that particular relationship. But age is not significant other than the fact you probably don't get each other's cultural differences to the same extent.
So the outside pressures, is there a way of dealing with those?
You have to be strong in your relationship and strong with yourself and talk about it and talk about what's affecting you and what's impacting on you. I mean, in this particular situation, the young lady took flight because she couldn't cope any more with it. And I think that's really, really sad. You know, it can be a very in-depth friendship of two different age groups in that way. Mm. And I think that when I say cultural differences, I mean, you know, an older man might make a joke about the magic roundabout that somebody who's 22 might not get, you know what I mean? So you're cutting out a certain extent of your dialogue, but a very small amount of your dialogue. But as I said, between these two people, they had a very communal subject, and if that's what's happening to the listener of West Kent Radio, then she's got a good, proper relationship.
Mm. So that's an older man and a younger woman. What about the other way around? How is that viewed?
An older woman and a younger man doesn't appeal to me. Because it doesn't appeal to me, because an older man, a younger man makes me feel old. An older man makes me feel like a kitten. You know, an older man makes you feel young and flighty and attractive, whereas somebody who's younger than you as a man is just going to make you feel old. That's my feeling as a woman, because women don't age as well as men. And I would wonder what he saw in me, I suppose. But then again, it comes back to the same thing. You know, if you've got communal subjects that you're passionate about and enjoying each other's company, it's different for everybody.
But society seems to impose, in inverted commas, rules. And is society right in imposing rules?
No, I... This is what I was hedging around, really, John. It's actually being comfortable in your relationship and ignoring what society is. If you're not doing anything that's wrong, then why should what society is general? Society says all sorts of things that are not always right.
Okay, thank you for that. We're going to have George Ezra next and Hold My Girl. Post Malone and Chemical. You're listening to West Kent Today, 95.5, 106.7 FM, online and on your smart speaker. With me is Delissa Needham, and she's written a book, How I Met My Man and How You Can Meet Yours. She's also been an agony aunt, and for us, she still is an agony aunt. And I'm giving her as much agony as I possibly can this morning in some of the questions. Over the weekend, we had the Eurovision Song Contest, we had the BAFTAs last night, and on BBC they're advertising this new dating programme, and it's called I Kissed a Man, and it's about where the first thing that happens when two gay men meet is they kiss. Now, is that a good basis for a programme?
Having worked in television, John, I know what they've done. They've just gone and pitched something like that to the commissioning editor, and they thought, great idea, you have to do something very radical. But I don't think that that's a very good basis for a relationship, and I don't know whether or not these are real relationships that come out of this. But, you know, it's putting sex at the top of the agenda in any relationship, and that's never a good thing. Sex at some point dies out, doesn't it?
Well, I hope not.
Well, you know what I mean. It's not quite as it's not the first flush of passion after about 6 months. It moves into something else. So, you know what you get from a kiss. That's not two minds engaging with each other, is it? That's not friendship forming. That's titillation. And I, as I was saying to you between in the break, John, you know, it's very difficult for me. I'm commenting as a woman. I can comment to a certain extent about men because I engage with men in relationships, and I can certainly comment about my own gender, but it's terribly difficult to comment about gay and gay relationships because they're not my first-hand experience. But and they have my experience of my friends who are gay is that they have different ways of holding relationships and conducting relationships. They're more capable of open marriages and open relationships, I think, than heterosexuals are as well. That may be a wide generalisation, but it's been my experience.
Well, I think one of the comments I heard, when you see things like there's a lorry reversing, I can hear it in my headphones. When you see things like RuPaul's Drag Race and programs like that, where it all seems to be extreme, and gay pride marches and things like that, I just wonder is that OTT and does it promote promiscuity?
Oh, there's two questions there, isn't there, really? Yeah. And the first one I'm going to deal with again as a television producer, I'm going to say that the landscape for your attention, you, the viewer's attention, is so crowded now that, you know, it's something like you've got an 8-second attention span. So everybody's doing everything they can to grab you and keep you watching their channel. So, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race, you're going to watch that. It's got to be something that has really got to make you stay with that channel. So that's why everything is becoming so much more extreme on that television landscape. Does it promote promiscuity? You could say that about pornography that has got more and more extreme over the years. You could say, you could even say, does watching a crime or a thriller encourage you to commit murder? It doesn't necessarily encourage promiscuity. No, that's down to the individual. Does it normalize promiscuity? That's the question, I suppose. And again, that's down to you and your own morals.
Yeah. And we just touched on the matter of infidelity in the break. And you were saying that most women can cope better with infidelity than men. Can you expand on that?
Well, I was saying that women who have experienced infidelity in their man, who decide to stick with their marriage, very often have a long-lasting and happy marriage. What the issue is with infidelity is not that somebody has strayed outside the marriage to perform something intimate with somebody else, but that person has told lies. And it's the lies and the trust that is the bit that enters the relationship from then onwards that you have to deal with. And if you can deal with that between the two of you, then you have a solid marriage moving forward.
But unfortunately, many marriages do break up because of infidelity.
Yes, they do. And it is throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Do we impose and ask for too much of two people, for a man and a woman, that they should stay together and be together for the rest of their lives? I think we all have a duty in a relationship and a long marriage to show each other respect, to encourage each other, to help each other, and to overcome those problems. Isn't that ideological? When one person strays, it's very often because they feel they're not getting what they want at home. Two halves make a whole. Not getting it in the house, so you go look for the other half elsewhere. Did you ever see that wonderful television show? It's one of my favourites, John. It's called Cheaters.
No.
You ever see it? It's a long-running series that was on, I can't remember, it was in Channel 5, it ran to about 50 episodes. There's a tall guy, a detective in a black polo neck, black jeans, black dyed hair, and the woman will go to him and say, I think my husband's having an affair, and he'll say, we'll find you the proof. So they go out on the team and they find her the proof, they come back and they show her footage of her husband having an affair, and they say, do you want closure? And she'll go, yeah. And so they take her to catch her husband having sex with his secretary or whatever. And always, in every single show, the wife will come out and go, gotcha. And the husband will be misbehaving with his secretary or whatever. And he'll stand up and pull his trousers up and say, it's your fault, pointing at the wife. It was in nearly every show. It was remarkable.
That's deflection, isn't it?
Yes, it was. It was.
I think that one of the questions that so it came up then, you were saying that living together for a long time, because of course age, the average age has increased remarkably because of health and things like that. So before, marriages and that were obviously shorter, I'm talking generally because there are exceptions, yeah. Because people didn't live as long.
Yeah, there's more marriages breaking up now, sort of late 50s and early 60s, but those people do go on to get married again to somebody else. So, yes, it's true. I mean, marriage is as popular as it ever was, but people are being... But isn't it wonderful if two people can ride the roller coaster that is marriage when you get towards the end of your life's journey to be with that same person that you've been with since you were 18? How remarkable is that? Even if you've actually got your hands around their throat, throttling them.
I know, we're not promoting violence here this morning. I remember a cartoon I once saw, and it was a very elderly couple in a home talking to each other. And one said to the other, right, now's the time we're going to get divorced. We've got our children in the home next door.
Because what?
We've got our children in the home next door now. We're only staying together for the sake of the children, but now they're in a...
next door. They do say marriage is a life sentence without parole.
You don't get time off for good behaviour.
No. I don't know. I mean, I've been proposed to a number of times and never said yes because I didn't feel as though there was anybody I could, you know, guarantee to spend the rest of my life with. My parents were married for a lifetime, and I think that's, you know, an achievement that I think it would, thought it would be hard to emulate.
So how long, it's not a rude question, was their lifetime together?
For them, about 20 years, no, 70 years, yeah.
Well, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's remarkable, isn't it? And they met quite by accident. Again, as you know, my book is full of love stories about how people met. My father was a bell ringer going to the local church from, you know, outside the county, and my mother was asked at the last minute to go and make up, as they were short of ringers, and she went at the last minute. And this young man had cycled all the way from Cambridge into Lincolnshire, and in order to stay close to this lady that he'd, girl that he'd found attractive in the bell tower, he accepted a lift back so he could be in the back of the van with her, and then he asked her out. Complete accident.
But it's going back to what you were saying about earlier, having a common interest.
Yeah. They had a common interest, yeah. It's bell ringing, and they're both very intelligent people, actually.
So there was something there that sparked, and it lasted. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right, I think we're going to have another track now, and we're going to have... this is not a good track to have if you're in the middle of a town and you know where you want to go but you don't know how to get there. It's U2, Where the Streets Have No Name. Where the Streets Have No Name from U2. You're listening to West Kent Radio with me is Delissa Needham, and I'm going to read a little bit from her book, chapter 18. It's a very long chapter, it's about three sentences. Dating in the Real World is Fun, is the title. All this dating malarkey is meant to be fun. Enjoy it. When you're left nursing a broken heart, holding a baby, sawing the dog in half, etc., then you're allowed to think, well, that didn't work out right, so I'll have a good cry. But the girl who intends to meet a man doesn't fall at the first fence, unless she's had too many tequila shots. Now, that's amusing, funny. But there's actually a real meaning behind it, isn't there?
Yeah, get up and get on with it again. Yeah, you know, I mean, my mother has a saying: when the dog dies, throw out the basket and get another dog. It's not that simple, but you know, what she's really saying is, you know, you've got a broken heart. It shouldn't put you off getting back in the saddle and getting on with it again. Get out and meet somebody else. We're meant to be with somebody. The human race is not an individual.
Definitely not. No man is an island, but I think we have to say no person is an island. Mm. Yet there are some people who feel more comfortable in their own company.
Yeah, and isn't that wonderful? I'm like that, but I thrive on being around people as well. And, you know, it's healthy for all of us to have the experience of love and to be given a hug. And I think, you know, that's what most people strive for. And I'm sure there are people out there who listening to us today who aren't single and aren't fortunate enough, like you, John, to have somebody to love and somebody to love them. Isn't that one of the most wonderful things we can achieve in life?
No, and I never thought it would happen again because so my late wife died almost 3 years ago. I never thought I'd meet anybody else. As you know, I go along to a bereavement support group. I'm allowed to go. I'm now a trustee, so even though I'm going out, I'm married again. But all these people, we've got more men coming along now than we had before, which is great. And we just enjoy each other's company. And we can have a chat. We have another group that meets once a month. And that gets a little bit more serious because people are in the first stages of grief and really wanting to know how to cope. They haven't got that person next to them to guide them through all the difficult decisions because they've left
and
the difficult decisions they've got to make. And there are constant reminders. So, yes, it is good to have a relationship, but sometimes, as this chapter indicates, relationship ends, sometimes tragically. Sometimes, I remember my late wife, when we first went out, we went to Tunbridge School to a concert of Italian music, which bored me rigid. Sorry, Tunbridge School, but I just was not impressed with that. When I took her home that evening, she said, I hope you don't mind, I'm going to go out with somebody else. My response was, well, your loss. We got married 2 years later.
Thank you. But you were very proactive about finding your second wife.
Yes.
You?
Yeah. Yes. Well, I wasn't looking for a wife as such. I was looking for someone to have conversations with, go and do things, visiting places. And I went out with several women.
Well, I think that's the right attitude, not necessarily the going out with several women bit, John, but just going out to have somebody to whose company to enjoy and somebody to talk to and to be with. That to me is the way you should approach it completely. But other people get ahead of themselves. I want somebody to marry. I want somebody to do this with and that with. You know, just go out and enjoy life and meet people, and you will meet the one eventually. Yeah.
Well, the three ladies I went out with all knew about each other. So it was saying I met up with so-and-so last week, went to such and that. So it was friendships that were developing.
Yes.
And then the last one developed quite quickly into more than friendship.
Yes.
Which took us both by surprise.
Yeah. Well, isn't that lovely?
It is.
I would like to know more about the bereavement thing, because I have friends who've lost husbands recently.
Okay, we'll come back to that shortly. I've just got to do a little bit of juggling here on the computer. If I can get the mouse working, I'm going to... This is West Kent Today on West Kent Radio with me, John Butt, and Delissa Needham. And we've been talking about relationships, whether it's been infidelity, whether it's been gay, whether it's long-lasting. And we just moved on to the subject of bereavement, which is a topic that we have spoken about on this programme before. You've got an instance...
I have a friend who recently lost her husband quite out of the blue, and they had a very, very happy marriage. I'd only seen them, they'd come for dinner like a month or so earlier, so it was very, very sad to hear. But I was wondering if she had heard about bereavement groups.
Right. Many churches will have something. It's a question of looking around. This one I go to was started by a director of a funeral company, because she was noticing that people were coming in after funerals just to have somebody to talk to, because they're on their own. So she started this group called Friends Together, which now has four groups in Tunbridge.
Lovely.
Group in Tunbridge Wells, Pembury, and, you know, it's like a coffee morning for most, but it's get together with people. They've registered charity, they've now got a coordinator, and always looking to open more groups because there is such a need.
Yes.
And it's a good place just to go and meet people. And if you're feeling upset that day and you need to have a cry, there's always plenty of tissues around, but people there understand.
Yes.
You're
yes.
not looking out of place.
Yes.
And sometimes somebody can say something and you choke up. Particularly if it's an anniversary.
Yeah.
And there are people who've been bereaved a few weeks, a few months, a few years, but we're able to just to share. And on the Tuesday evening one, which meets, we've gone into deeper things because, you know, wills and probate and dealing with solicitors, dealing with charities who've been left something in the will, and it probate has not been granted, and all they do is hound, which is nasty. There are a couple of charities I know about who do that, but no consideration for the person who's grieving. It is. They're not charities I now support.
No, I can understand that. That's awful. It's so much to deal with when you're left a widow or a widower.
Yeah. Because you had no preparation for it. And, my late wife, Hilary, once we knew she was diagnosed with cancer, we got all our bank accounts in joint names, the wills were made, lasting power of attorneys were made, and we planned for it.
Yes.
It still came as a shock when it happened.
Yes.
Because over a period of a few weeks, she went from looking a healthy, attractive lady into a very old lady. And that was hard to take as well.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, it's that long-term relationship that suddenly comes to an end. And if you haven't prepared for it,
yeah,
like your friend, it happens suddenly.
Yeah.
Where do you get support?
You've lost your other half, your person that you go to for the answers, for support, for everything. Mm. Then suddenly that person's gone and you're dealing with it all yourself. And you're not only dealing with the fact that you've lost somebody, you're dealing with all the things that are practical that you have to deal with too. It's a very hard time, and the more support there is out there, the better.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably, when you're grieving like that, it's also actually hard to find that support too, because you've got to be proactive to find the support. So it's good when you hear that there are more and more groups starting to do that.
It's worth looking, going onto a search engine on the web, but then a lot of people don't have web access.
Yes, exactly. Because I was going to say, you know, if you go into Facebook and ask, or if you go into Nextdoor and say, are there any, you know, of those kind of groups around? But, you know, you can always ask people.
Yeah.
People don't know, they will ask somebody who does, and then they will come back to you with an answer.
And if they've been members of clubs or societies, then they've got a network they can ask.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. It's not something that happens to just you, it happens to everybody. Yeah. And in fact, you were saying that you and your partner, when you knew, started to plan for it. But actually, we should all plan, because it happens to all of us. It's as sure as taxes, death and taxes, as they say.
Well, we made our first wills in, I think it was 1980, 3 years after we got married. And then obviously changed them as the kids grew up and whatever. But it was always there. We knew it was done.
Yes.
So we didn't have to worry about that. But then the laws start changing and you keep on top of it. It's a hard time.
Yeah, do you know what? I actually redid my will at the weekend, and I've sort of gone down to it in quite detail of saying I want to give this person this person this. And then at the end of it, I was thinking, they're all going to have a very nice time.
Yeah, why can't I appreciate it now? Delissa, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having me, John.
And we look forward to you coming again next month.
Good, thank you.
And a book is How I Met My Man and How You Can Meet Yours. If you want to find out more about Delissa, just do a web search for her. She's got a website, which I can't recall offhand.
Thedatist.co.uk.
So we're going up to the news with Haircut 100 and favourite shirts.